Hangout Air is on, is live. Okay, let's press play here. All right, guys, we are here today. Raymond and Callum. Say hey, Callum.
Hey.
All right, and we are here today. Today's podcast topic is going to be why you should be shooting manual today. And here we go. We get a little bit of intro music and our logo. Yeah, hey, I like that. And we're live. Perfect. Okay, so first things first, last week's podcast. Callum, how'd you feel about it?
Awesome. You know, some nerves when we started. You know, first podcast, I'm not a, you know, as Raymond likes to say of himself, but also similar to me, you know, face for radio, voice for silent movies. So it was good. I think we had some good tips in there and a good conversation about, you know, how progression really happens. So it was exciting to kind of get that out there and just like, you know, let people know that you're going to get better.
Yeah. It's very important to let people know that they're going to get better, because once they know that, then they have that mindset and then they're going to let it happen. I heard a quote over, last week that was, your perception of reality brings reality to existence. Meaning, if you feel like the rest of the world is awesome and it's fun and everybody is like genuinely a good person, you're going to have those same vibes towards everybody else. You're going to feel like life is good. I like people. They're friendly. This is going to be fantastic. Whereas if you feel like the whole world is against me, I'm no good at photography, I just can't get this whole off-camera flash thing, you're doubting yourself, it's just going to be negative and it's going to be no good. So like you said, it's always good to be positive. And I think that the episode went really well too.
Awesome.
However, last week we were talking about this. I was actually on a juice fast. It was my third day of drinking nothing but juice.
Is it over? Food.
It's over. It's over. But that day, or during the whole juice fast, my brain was in a bit of a fog, but my body felt fantastic. I just wasn't thinking clearly. But now that I've kind of gone back to my old ways of eating, my brain feels more alert, but my body just feels like garbage. So I don't know. There's got to be a happy medium in there somewhere.
You look good. So that's the important part right now.
Well, you can only see the shoulders up. That's why.
Well, you know, that's why I keep the monitor up here. Today we have some awesome, awesome topics, and we have an awesome photo to show you as well. So I hope you guys are excited. Raymond, do you want to throw us into the topic for the afternoon?
Yeah, of course. So like we said earlier, this whole podcast is going to be all about shooting manual and why it's so important and why it's going to take your photography to the next level. So I'm going to start off with a bit of a story, and I think Callum has one as well. When I first started, my background, as some of you know, is in film. So on film sets, the cameras, they're full manual. Everything is manual. There's even no autofocus on the cameras. There's somebody whose dedicated job it is to changing the focus on the lens while you're shooting. It's a very hard job. But just to show that everything is manual, especially when it comes to film, like you pre-decide your ISO essentially, because you can't change film speed while it's in there, right? So I had to learn how to shoot completely manual. And that's just kind of how I brought my skill set into photography. I just continued to shoot manual all the time. But when I started shooting weddings, I got kind of scared. I second guessed myself and I thought, you know what, just to be on the safe side, I'm going to shoot in aperture priority. Therefore, I know that the camera is hopefully going to make some smart decisions when it comes to metering, and I'm just not going to miss any shots. And when you're beginning, you don't really know the flow of the day. You don't know, you know, what happens next, or just kind of the natural progression of things. So shooting in aperture priority, it does help. It helped me and I got some great shots. But I found out that when I got home and I went to go cull through my photos, there was a lot of tiny variations in all the photos. And those tiny variations, I didn't like. It was harder for me to control the camera and get exactly what I wanted out of it. So I almost decided immediately, you know, I'm just going to shoot manual always. And if I miss a shot, it's better to miss one shot than it is to make sure that the wedding as a whole is exactly as you want to capture it. Does that make any sense to you, Cal?
No, that makes absolute sense. Yeah. This is very similar, not so much in weddings, but when I first started taking photography a bit more seriously, my fiance now, but my girlfriend at the time, Catherine, who's in the other room, probably secretly listening to me. We were backpacking through Europe. And I was shooting on at the time, I believe, actually, I think it's like just decommissioned up on my, shelf there, but it was just a D90. And D90 is still a very good camera, you know, for the time. And I was going, I think I took a 50 mil lens with me. That's all I took through Europe, a 50 mil on a crop sensor. But I was shooting aperture priority mode. And as I'm walking through the streets, you go from sunny to being in complete dark shade. And what would happen is I'd be shooting someone in complete sun, like, you know, blasting in the face, sun right on them. And my camera would compensate for that. And I'd have a fairly exposed image with completely dark background. I walk into the shade, and then there would be a completely kind of very low contrast, very bright scene of someone with a very bright wall all at the same time. And that's only because the aperture priority mode in the camera didn't really get what I wanted to see. I saw something, and the camera shot something else just because of the way the metering system works. And I think this is probably very similar to what was going on with you in the weddings, Raymond. But I'd get back after a day. We'd sit back with the, you know, if we were in France, we'd have a glass of wine. I'd run through some photos that we thought were cool from the day. I'd be very frustrated because there was no consistency to what I wanted. I was shooting all at the same aperture, but it was all over the place. And I think that's kind of what you were saying with your weddings.
Yeah, exactly. That's the big thing is that, for one, there's no consistency. And for two, when you let the camera decide what it thinks is a proper exposure, doesn't always mean that it's going to be good or
what you see.
Or what you see. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And a lot of the times it's not – it's exposed properly, obviously, because that's the camera's one job is to expose properly. But there's a lot of times where you don't want it to expose properly. You purposely Absolutely. Overexpose or you purposely underexpose maybe to get a more of a silhouette. And it's when you're in aperture priority mode, I guess we should talk about what aperture priority mode is now that I think about it.
Yeah, very briefly we could.
Okay. Go ahead. Talk about it.
Yeah. So let's do this. I'll take this. This might be actually very hard for someone to see. We'll see how it looks. If not, I can explain it a different way, but I've got an old 35mm lens here.
Hey, it is Raymond here from the future. What you are listening to is an episode of the Beginner Photography Podcast recorded back in 2015. As you can tell, audio has come a long way since then. Now, in the early days of the episode, we had this great idea that the podcast would be on YouTube and that there'd be this visual element to it for people to come see. And I don't know what we were thinking. It's a podcast. People listen to it in their ears. However, there are things that we discussed today that we reference seeing. So I have made it easy for you to be able to do so without spending, you know, an hour of your life watching a YouTube video. You can check out the show notes for this episode where I'm going to have screen grabs of everything that we talk about in today's episode so that you can see for yourself. Now, if you would like to head over to the show notes of this episode, you can do so by heading over to beginnerphotopod.com/002. Again, that is beginnerphotopod.com/002. Now, in this episode, I'm going to be chiming in every once in a while with a little bit of extra information now that time has gone on and things have changed and things have updated. So with that, let's just go ahead and get on into this episode of the Beginner Photography Podcast.
And I'm going to open it right up. This is the old, if can everyone see this? Is it a little dark? A little 35?
No, I can see just fine.
35 F2 there, yeah. So, you know, I use this for a long time, but so this only opens up to F2, and what the F2 stands for is that hole right there. So the lens can open up that big, and that's considered F2 to this lens. So you can see it on the other side. You know, it's quite a large opening. And what all that means is that there is tiny little blades inside, and they control how much light and how much depth of field you have. Those are the only two major functions of this. So can everyone see that?
Yeah, I can see it perfectly. It looks great.
Perfect. I'm kind of looking through the hole, so I'm not really sure where I'm pointing this at.
No, and we can see you upside down and perfect.
Perfect. So what you're seeing there is a kind of a change between all these different f-stop numbers. So the lesson learned there is as you open it up to F2, you let in a lot of light. And as you close it down, not a lot of light. That's, what is that, F22 right there, if you can even see the hole.
It's a pinpoint.
Yeah, it's a pinpoint. So that's essentially what aperture priority mode is. If you set to A on Nikon Canons, is it A as well?
No, it's AV.
AV. I'm a Nikon. Raymond's a Canon, so that's helpful. If you set it to either of those, the camera, you're going to tell the camera what hole size you want. So what aperture setting.
Meaning how much light you want to come into the lens.
Yeah. So F2 all the way to F22, you can shoot at anything you want. But the camera instinctually will take all the other settings. So that's your shutter speed and your ISO range. And it will automatically assess for that and make a perfect exposure based on the hole size or the aperture stop that you want. And that's kind of the same thing that happens for shutter speed, shutter priority mode as well.
Right. So essentially what's happening is that because your aperture defines how much light is let in and your depth of field, you're letting the camera decide everything else. You're letting the camera decide, you know what, my most important aspect of this photo is going to be the depth of field, essentially.
Sure.
You can decide everything else that you want to. And what it's going to decide is based on what is exposed properly. So, you know, when you look through the viewfinder and down at the bottom, or maybe Nikon, I think it's off to the side.
You can set it, but it's at the bottom too, the meter.
Okay, perfect. You see, like, it's, I think it goes from +2, +1, 0, +1, and then +2. And that's the exposure. It's naturally going to go to 0. Which means that there's no compensation. It's perfectly exposed. It doesn't need plus a stop, and it doesn't need minus a stop of light.
Yeah, what you're focusing on is perfectly exposed.
Right. And then it's your job. There's more control in aperture priority. You can tell it, you know, if you want more light, you can allow it. Or if you want less light, you can allow it as well. But by default, it's going to decide for you. So here's why aperture priority is awesome. And at the same time, why manual sucks, which sounds exactly backwards of what the point of this podcast is about. But for that first wedding that I shot, I was in aperture priority mode, obviously, and we were outside and I was just taking a few portraits, right? And the portraits looked good. It looked fantastic. I mean, it was a pretty moderate ISO maybe, you know, 400 or something like that. My shutter speed, I think it was pretty high because we were outside, but I set my aperture to an F2. So when I walked inside after we were done with the portraits, I just continued to keep shooting. I didn't have to change any settings. My ISO, it was okay. I mean, there was some window light that came in, so it was properly exposed, but the camera decided, you know what? We're going to go from a shutter speed of 0.32 of a second, maybe down to 1/60th. Of a second to compensate for that amount of light. And I didn't miss any shots. Nothing really happened, but I didn't miss it. I didn't have to do anything to get the shots. Now my next wedding, now let's see if this makes sense. I was shooting manual because I decided, you know what? I'm going to decide exactly what I want to shoot. So I was in manual. We were outside, exact same situation. I was taking bridal portraits. Everything looked good. ISO, say 0.32 of a second at F2. Taking photos, it looked good. And then we went back into a very dark church. There was no window light. It was a very dark church. And the bride saw her grandma, who she hadn't seen in years, for the first time. And she ran over to the grandma, and they started hugging. And I was like, oh, this is great. This is great. I'm just taking all these photos. This is so fantastic. I cannot wait. She's going to love these photos. And then when the moment was done, I looked at the back of my camera, and my settings were still all the same. It was still ISO 400, 1/3200 of a second at F2, meaning that these photos were now like 7 or 8 or more stops underexposed.
Almost couldn't, pitch black.
Pitch black. Couldn't be saved. The moment was gone forever. I missed it. I lost it. Okay. And that's one reason why aperture priority is awesome. But now you can kind of figure out the flow of the wedding. Now you can't really figure out when unexpected guests are going to show up, but you have this idea now that you know that if you're from outside and that you're going inside, maybe while you're walking towards the door, you can just kind of turn that dial or knob or whatever it is for whatever camera system that you're using just to bring down the shutter speed, just to save yourself in case something happens when you get in. Now, say you see another grandma who you haven't seen or that the bride hasn't seen in years, and then they go to embrace. Now just simply turning down your shutter speed while walking towards the door, now maybe they're only going to be 3 steps underexposed. My doorbell just rang. I'm sorry about that. Give me 1 second, okay? Okay. Sorry about that. I had to go lock the door so that my 2-year-old doesn't run away and start a new life somewhere.
That could be risky.
You know? It could. I don't think that my wife would be too happy if she came home and he was gone. So
at minimum on the couch, for sure.
Yeah, exactly. So where were we?
So, yeah, I was just saying that, you know, there is a really good argument there, it sounds like, for aperture priority shooting. And while that, you know, can be the case in some situations, it is advantageous. Shooting in manual mode sounds really daunting and scary. Like, all your images are going to come out black, or all of them are going to come out completely white. It's not going to happen. Not for long. You know, even I went through manual mode situations where I would shoot something just like Raymond did in a church and black on the back of the camera. 6 stops underexposed. You're like, great, awesome. And you move on and you'll get better. You'll understand how the correlation between aperture, shutter, and ISO settings on your camera actually affect each other. And shooting in manual allows you to have more creative control over your images. Whether in your living room with your kids or out shooting friends and family in a park, there are even professionals that will shoot manually 100% of the time and purposefully underexpose 3 stops. Just to throw one out there is Sam Hurd. He does this all the time on his Nikon gear simply to be able to bring the dynamic range back up. And that's a conversation for another day.
Oh, yes.
but the point remains is manual mode just gives you more control. And I think it's really important that we get across to you that it can be scary for the first few weeks, but if you just sit there for a half an hour while your kids are playing with their Lego on the floor and just see what happens when you change different settings between your shutter speed, your aperture, and your ISO, you're going to quickly understand what's happening when you change one piece of the puzzle.
Yeah, that's very good. That's a very good point. In fact, I have an example here. Okay, so this was actually just to show that, you know, even people who have been shooting in manual for a long time can still – what am I trying to say? This is expecting what's going to happen, okay? So let's see if I can share this real quick. So let me give you a little backstory. The bride and groom just got married. They just said their I do's, and now they're walking out of the church, and they're walking – or they walked out of their church, and there's this long overhang hallway outside, I guess. Everybody's yay, waving flags and whatnot, and then they get into their car. Okay, so I knew that they were going to walk down this little outside hallway, right? But I knew that they were going to walk into their car. So I purposely like underexposed this photo – about a stop, because I knew that once they got to their car, it was just going to be blown out because they were no longer under this awning, essentially, okay? So this is when they got to their car, right? And it's not a good photo, but this isn't what I'm delivering to them. This is just for educational purposes, right? So it looks good, right?
Are you ready to transform your love for photography into profit? Imagine capturing beautiful moments while bringing in a little extra money for your family each month. Sound too good to be true? With CloudSpot, it's not just a dream. Designed by photographers for photographers, CloudSpot simplifies your business. Effortlessly organize shoots, send professional contracts, questionnaires, invoices, and enjoy faster payment payouts with the lowest fees in the industry, including PayPal. Forget lost emails and messy spreadsheets. CloudSpot offers a streamlined workflow, letting you focus on the moment. And here is the clincher. Grab your free CloudSpot account at deliverphotos.com and you'll get access to my personal wedding and portrait contracts and questionnaires. So don't let uncertainty hold you back. Embrace the future of photography business management with CloudSpot Studio. Sign up at deliverphotos.com today and transform your passion into profit.
Yeah, that looks fine. That looks, you know, blown out sky, which is actually okay.
No. Wait.
Or is it I'm looking at something different?
This is the edited photo.
Okay.
This is the before.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah.
So you can see that the settings are still exactly the same. An 80th of a second at f4. And this is actually brought up a stop. So I underexposed this.
Perfect. Okay, yeah, I see what's going on here.
Because I knew that by the time I got out here, I wanted a few extra stops of
light,
latitude, if that makes sense. So this is how it looked straight out of the camera.
Sure.
And as you can see off to the side there, I had to bring it down 2 2/3 of a stop to bring it to what this is right here. And this continued to happen. Same with this photo.
Yeah.
Same with this photo. Same with this photo. And then it wasn't until this one that I got to actually dial it down a little bit. This one's only a stop and 3/4 under. And then this one is straight out of camera.
Yeah. Cool.
So this was like a very high energy type moment, right? People are walking out, they're all excited, and then they're getting into their car. There's really not a lot of time for you to change your settings. But this comes into planning for what's going to happen and going ahead and just preparing for it. And knowing how to use your camera to achieve what it is that you want to achieve. So I shot those in manual to save myself. If I was in aperture priority, I might have, it probably would have been better exposed. But with that highlighted sky, it might have even been underexposed. Who knows?
It might have been really underexposed, or I might have picked something in the background to expose with, depending on where Raymond was focusing.
Or metering.
Yeah, and you can Raymond was doing here was kind of pre-planning for the shots in the car, which is really awesome. And this is something you can do in a park, anywhere, when you're taking photographs, is kind of go where we're going from sunlight to shade, shade to sunlight, and you can kind of just take a guess. Go ahead and take a guess. Like, you're not going to – there's nothing to lose. Just take a guess at what you think the ISO should change to or your shutter speed should change to and go for it. And that's the best way to learn. You're going to learn the best just by trial and error. That's all I would add to that.
No, that's totally true. The only way that you can learn is by doing. You can read every single book that there is to know about photography. And if you don't know, if you can't see how the examples change in the camera by you changing them, then it might not connect. I know that I could read everything in the world about everything and still not know how to do any of it. I'm very hands-on. And I think that a lot of creatives are. I don't know if it's the same for you, Callum.
Yeah, I'm definitely not someone who sat well in school.
Right.
You know, I did fine, but I'm definitely someone who has to pick something up and do it and see what's actually changing when I pick up my camera and I go, okay, from one thing to the other, I need to know what's happening and see the physical change on my histogram or what the image, how much darker or how much brighter it gets.
And that's something that a lot of beginners do. You know, they and I've talked about this before, they lust after like all this pro gear. They read about all the reviews. They research the absolute best lenses. They look at photos taken with, you know, these lenses that they just lust over. They finally get it, and then they go to take these photos, and, they're just okay photos because they don't know how to utilize the gear that they have. It's because they just don't have the experience.
Absolutely.
So you can have just garbage equipment, and the more experience that you get, your photos are going to get better.
Totally. And this is, I think, actually going to be a conversation for maybe the next or, you know, one of the upcoming podcasts we have kind of in the go. But I guess maybe I should 30 seconds just show you guys, like, this lens here is it's a 1990s or 80s Tamron 90 mil f2.8 macro. I picked this thing up for maybe all of $150 from 150 Canadian, but that's what I pay. Used, and it's got like a little crack in the screen there, if you guys can see that.
Oh yeah.
But I'll be honest with you, I use it every time I need to do anything macro. So I mean, I used to use this one I showed you earlier, the f2.35, which isn't considered pro gear by any sense anymore. I do have the new Sigma 35, but you know, your gear is not holding you back,
yeah,
by any sense. It's really what you understand about your cameras and your what you can do with light. So I just kind of – I want to motivate you to not be so worried about the new hot Canon or Nikon body or lenses coming out there.
Yeah, exactly. And it's important to know that pros buy professional equipment for several reasons. One of them could be that they need that extra stop of shutter speed to go up to 1/8,000th of a second. The other might be that they go on a lot of adventures and their gear just takes a lot of hits, and having a body that's made out of aluminum is better than plastic.
Yeah, absolutely.
The sensors inside maybe don't change all that much. Like, I picked up a little Canon 70D for, you know, just in case, to do a little bit of video stuff, but it has a crop sensor inside. It has the same crop sensor that's inside of a, like, I think it's a Canon T6i or something.
Yeah, the new C6s, yeah.
Yeah, it's like $600 cheaper. The only pro to this is it's got just a better construction. And I don't know. I mean, that's really it. I mean, it can take more hits. Basically, the body isn't made out of pure plastic, but that doesn't mean that I'm going to get any better photos out of it. Because it's the sensor that matters.
Right. Yeah, no. And I think that's really important as well to note that, you know, besides, there's not a lot of, like, sensors are good, but professionals were shooting with, the, you know, some really, what we consider bad technology only, you know, 5-6 years ago, but it was mind-blowing to see at the time. So, I mean, don't think that you need to have a D4, D4S, Mark 5, is it the 5D3 that you guys currently have on Canon? Mm-hmm. Just to be able to take good photos. There's people taking great photos with iPhones now. So,
hey, Raymond here. And it is so funny listening to this because, you know, today the 5D Mark III, the Canon 5D Mark III is considered old technology. You know, from a video standpoint, it didn't shoot in 4K. There was no video autofocus. It still used CF cards. In fact, the 5D Mark IV, which obviously came after the 5D Mark III, has also been replaced by Canon's new mirrorless RF systems. But when this was originally recorded, it's funny because I had a 5D Mark III and it really felt like being on the bleeding edge of photographic technology. And, you know, it's today, there's really no practical reason that a professional photographer would shoot with a 5D Mark III. So again, I think the idea that we're getting at here is to not worry about gear, because when this was recorded, I had the top of the line gear. I was able to capture great photos, but now it's old. So even though we're looking at, you know, quote unquote old cameras today, you're still able to achieve amazing images because it's not about the camera. It really is. Think about this. Every camera that has ever came out has been at the cusp of some sort of like digital technology at some point, right? So even if a camera came out 5 years ago, you know, like the 5D Mark III, it's actually way longer than 5 years ago. But at the time, bleeding edge of technology. Today, not so much. But because it was back then, we're still able to create these amazing images. And it's not because of the camera itself, but it's because of your camera settings. Because camera settings won't change. And not only that, they can't change. It's a physical attribute to the image that you are capturing. So if you know how to shoot manual on one camera, you're going to know how to shoot in manual on every camera. Now, if you have any questions about camera settings, I have a free download for you called Picture Perfect Camera Settings. It is it's a free guide, a cheat sheet, if you will, that you can download over at the show notes of this episode over at beginnerphotopod.com/002. Again, you can see some of the images that we're talking about in this episode, and then also grab that Picture Perfect Camera Settings cheat sheet for yourself and start to take better photos today. Let's go ahead and get back on into today's interview.
What I'm trying to say there is, you know, you see something great and you should try and really bring out that inherent quality. If it's great sunlight or if it's great, I kind of lost my train of thought. Great sunlight. You want to just capture that great image, and really that gear is not going to hold you back at all.
Yeah. It's knowing your settings. It's knowing how to work your camera that's going to get you the best results. That's another thing about this camera, I guess, now that I think about it, is that the like the T6i or whatever the top entry level camera is, on the back here, like there's this dial for the 70D that lets me change my aperture. Right. So when I'm in the back of the camera like this, looking through it, imagine my thumb is right there and I could just boop, 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 change it. And then my shutter speed is right here. So at any moment I can change my shutter speed and my aperture. Whereas the like entry level cameras, I think you have to like press a button and then like press a dial next to it or something. So it just takes a little more time.
Same on the entry level Nikons now. You'll have to press a button to show up on the LCD to change.
Okay. Yeah.
It just slows you down a little bit from the moment.
It's because those cameras are geared kind of more towards a few of the automatic settings like aperture priority.
Or program mode. Which is
P
in Nikon. I think it's what? T is it?
I guess it's P in can. I see a P on the camera. I guess it's that. I don't know. I never
look at those settings. I just kind of move on.
Yeah. I mean, basically when I got into it, I just went straight manual and I never really tried anything else out. But, you know, another pro to shooting in manual is just the editing time, how much time it's going to save you there. Because if you're shooting all in one room where the girls are getting ready and basically your settings just don't change, it has the same light, nothing really changes. When you get back home and call through and pick out all those photos, you can edit one photo from that, get it looking good, maybe change a white balance, whatever attribute you apply to these photos, you do it to just one. And then you can select all of the photos that happened in that same room.
Yes.
And as long as your settings didn't really change, you can just batch all the settings across those photos. So now maybe if there was 20 or 30 photos, that would take you
an hour.
20 minutes worth of editing that you now got done in about 45 seconds.
Yeah, it's absolutely true. I think we should probably move on from this conversation though. I think we've not to say that we've, you know, kicked the dead horse. But we should probably show a pretty amazing photo that we found on Reddit. We wanted to show off.
Yeah. This is kind of a segment to where we're going to show off your work. So a lot of the times we're going to show off our stuff just as examples, but we want to showcase your work. We want to give you credit because we see a lot of awesome photos, and I'm sure that you do too. But today's photo, let's see, Callum, are you going to share this one?
I can. Let me just, before I pull it up there, I just want to pull up who it is to make sure I'm going to credit right. Cause we're also going to see if we can reach out to them and either get, you know, some insight into this shot or even pull them on the podcast, to talk about this shot. Cause it's actually, I really like this one. I'm a bit soft for black and white. So it's,
another reason to switch to Fuji.
Ooh, Raymond. Okay. So let me actually figure out how I'm going to get you. Sometimes I forget how to do screen shares. So there we go. Okay. Desktop, start screen share. Everyone can see Raymond on my screen.
Hey!
But now can you see this photo?
Oh yes.
Yeah. So this is a great photo. Nice black and white, very foggy day. Leading lines are very cool, coming from the bottom and kind of just disappearing into almost the center of the image. And we've got this kind of subject on a bike who's just kind of doing their thing.
Yeah, it's a really cool photo. I like that reflection kind of that I didn't notice the first time that I looked at it. But you can see the cyclist reflection down at the bottom, which is really interesting, which I don't know if you'd be able to see it anywhere else, or if that's just a product of where the sun is in correlation to where he is.
Yeah, well, the sun's definitely in front of the bike there.
Mm-hmm.
So you do get kind of that little bit of atmosphere where you can see that you can tell that the sun's on the other side of this fog. But where it is, you're not really sure. It's just a really neat black and white. I think there's a good minimalist element to it. And what's really interesting about this is I want to credit right now. I'm going to flip over. I'm going to take off screen share just for a real quick second. Goodbye, everybody. I'm off screen share. I'm not really sure.
Yep.
This was actually shot by user SharkDP on Reddit in the Photo Critique subreddit. And just so you're aware, and I'll pull the photo back up, he shot this on an 18 to 55 kit lens, it, on a Nikon D32.
Wow. I don't even know what that means in Canon world, but
D3200.
Okay.
I usually drop the two last
names. Very entry level, right?
Yeah, that's one of Nikon's kind of most entry-level cameras. It's kind of at the bottom of the range. And the kit lens 18-55 is I guess what you would consider a lens that is, you know, it has plastic elements to it.
I think it's all plastic.
Yeah, I don't even know. I'll be honest, I barely pay attention to those things.
Right.
But I think it is. I think it's all plastic, or most of the elements inside are plastic, just to keep down weight and obviously cost. But speaking to that, a D3200 with an 18-55 kit lens has taken this photo. And just to give you an idea of the settings, it was in, I think you're going to be able to see onto my screen, F11 at 1/250th of a second at ISO 400.
Yeah, and that's what really shocked me. Is that when I first saw the photo, the first thing that I thought of wasn't, oh, it's a cheap lens, it's a beginner photographer, cheap camera. What first got me was that it was shot at F11. And I guess I'm kind of still in the mindset that a lot of beginners are, is that if you spend a lot of money on a lens, you're going to play to its advantages and try to shoot as wide open as possible. Now, you have a cheap kit lens. You're going to want to shoot it as wide open as possible too, just to give you any sort of depth of field. But he went the Space DP, right?
SharkDP.
SharkDP.
User SharkDP on Reddit.
He went the opposite way on it, and he played to this lens's advantage by, you know what, I'm not going to trick anybody at shooting this at a 3.5. I'm going straight to 11. And that amount of depth of field,
Perfect.
It's perfect. It's forever, because you know why? It's the lines.
Yeah, you see the bridge. I believe that's a bridge. It can't not be a bridge, I think. You can see the sharpness run all the way through. Probably that's about 20, 40, 60. You can probably see about 80 feet into the bridge before it disappears. And it's beautiful.
Absolutely
beautiful. At F11. He still shot it at a fast shutter speed, 3/20th, which froze that person.
At
12/50th. Is that what it was?
Sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, 12/50. You're right, at F11. So it's great. It's beautiful. So I would like to clap for that.
Hey, Raymond here, and I know that diving into the world of editing can feel like navigating a maze, especially if you're just starting out. So that's why I created our exclusive collection of 52 Lightroom presets, absolutely free. While presets can dramatically enhance your photos, they're not a one-click solution. They're a starting point for your creativity and an opportunity to learn and grow in your editing skills. These presets work seamlessly with all versions of Lightroom, whether you're on a computer or using Lightroom Mobile. And they're designed to simplify your editing process, adding that professional touch to your photos while giving you the flexibility to fine-tune them to your taste. So if you're ready to take your photos to the next level, head over to freephotographypresets.com right now and get editing today.
Good job, Shark DP. Good job, Shark. Yeah, this looks like one of those, you know, great examples of street photography where I doubt that he knows that person. I doubt that you could ever just be like, hey, you know what? Just go ahead and ride your bike right there, right there. That's what I want to see. And then capture that.
It's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was a shot we really wanted to share that we saw recently. I don't even think it went up too long ago. I think it went up only like almost 2 days ago or a day ago. It was about a day and a half.
I think that we should challenge our listeners, and I'm going to do this too. Callum, I hope that you will too.
Okay.
Shoot at F11. We're going to try that. Maybe not F11, but a much higher f-stop than you would typically. I know that I love to stay stop down. Stop, hashtag stop down. I like it. I like to shoot at 2.8 or below just because I love that creamy depth of field, especially because I switched to Fuji and they have the crop sensors, but having that beautiful 1.2 on there really really doesn't make you think, oh, this is a crop sensor
right
photo. But right. Shooting this photo makes me want to shoot, makes me want to stop down. So
shooting at 11?
Yes. We're going to shoot at a very shallow? No. Narrow? Not narrow. Wide depth of field?
Let's let Raymond struggle.
We're going to stop down.
Collective viewers, stop down. Even professionals don't know their terminology from time to time, you know.
It's early. I've only had one cup of coffee today.
Stop down this week and take your shot. Try and be somewhere around maybe, let's say, F8 to F whatever, as down as you want to go. And, yeah, we'll try and highlight some people that we see next week.
I think it just started 8.
Start at 8 and work it down to what, F16 maybe, something like that? Sure.
22, whatever you want to do. Whatever you want to do. Because I know that nobody out there has a lens that its fastest speed is F8. The fastest or the slowest I think most people have is a 5.6, and that's going to be with a kit lens. So take it down another stop. Take it down to 8 or above.
And start there.
Start there. I'm going to work a lot this weekend to try to get an awesome photo. Because remember, the thing to focus on is lines or isolation. In that photo, there was a lot of, you know, fog. But what's really important is the lines of that fence, the lines that take you in, because it draws you right to the cyclist. Now, you might want to try something where maybe somebody's on the crest of a hill and they're just silhouetted by the sky behind them.
Sure, yeah.
You know, play to its advantages. You know that it's going to be a super that everything's going to be in focus. So play to that.
All right. Raymond here again. I know that this episode was from 2015, but if you are listening today and you decide to participate to and stop down to F8, I would still love to see your photos. This is one of the most fun things about being a podcast host is seeing photos from listeners like yourself. And in fact, today we have a very active community of fellow listeners who are new to photography, just like yourself. And that community is on Facebook. So I'm going to have a link if you want to join the Beginner Photography Podcast community, again, in the show notes of this episode. So again, if you want to join the community, the free community on Facebook, just head over to beginnerphotopod.com/002 to see photos from this episode. Grab your copy of Picture Perfect Camera Settings, cheat sheet, and join the safest place on the internet for new photographers.
Yeah, absolutely. And see what happens. We'll take a look before our next podcast here and try and highlight some of those on the podcast and reach out to you guys.
Yes. I'm going to have one. Callum's going to have one.
I'm going to have one. I'm going to a wedding tomorrow. So I'm going to, maybe I'll even try and get a wedding one. And I'll see if I can pull it off in the moment. I'll kind of pre-plan maybe a little bit.
I like it. So we're going to hashtag this stop down.
Should it be stop down and continue with the hashtag your next stop? Your next shot?
Your next shot.
Remember, that was our hashtag down. Last week, right?
Yeah. Yes, it is. Your next shot. I like it. Hashtag your next shot.
Hashtag stop down. Why not? Two hashtags.
Why not? Let's do it.
Okay.
I like it. Callum, this was another awesome episode. We talked about why shooting in manual is so important. We also talked a little bit about why it sounds like aperture priority is a good idea, but it's not.
You really, yeah. And I mean, and in the same vein, shutter priority, which we didn't really go into today. But, you know, they do give you some advantages, but on the whole, I think grow as a photographer and get a night and get a good, you know, can do this in your sleep understanding of your camera. Just dive into the water and just go manual, and shoot manual as much as you can. So you understand what's happening in all those three different compartments of your camera.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then there might be sometimes you do need to go back to shutter speed because you don't care about the aperture so much. You care about freezing your dog. And you'll let the aperture sort itself out.
Yeah, that's a good one too.
But manual does let you – it just helps you advance and learn just much quicker. I think it's trial by fire almost.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know what? A lot of us have kids. A lot of us have pets. Try it out there. Shoot manual with the kids, shoot manual with your pets, shoot manual around the house. If you're still not comfortable on maybe paid gigs that you have, maybe a photo shoot with a friend's family or something like that, resort back to what it is that you're most comfortable with. And then when you come home, manual, 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 because you're going to get to the point to where you're most comfortable with that. You're going to see something new that you couldn't have got with aperture priority. And then take a leap of faith, maybe give away a free photo shoot to a family and shoot that all in manual, because then there's going to be no expectations. You're not going to be out the hook on cash or anything. Just let them know that you're experimenting with something new and see how it goes. If anything else, you're going to have maybe some new work for your portfolio to show, hopefully, and just give it a shot.
Yeah, I'm going to leave with one last tip. And this is what I did when I was backpacking, when I was like completely brand new. I had no clue what I was doing. I was shooting aperture priority mode. I was trying to transition a little bit to manual. But what I did was I would shoot in manual and I'd look at it and go, oh, this is like so dark. This is really black or it's super bright. And what I would do is I'd flip to aperture priority mode just very quickly and go, what did my camera decide? And it goes, oh, okay, f8 at 1/400th of a second at ISO 100. I would flip back to manual, dial in those settings and take some shots and then just see what happens as I move into different spaces and try and sort out the changes in light from that initial setting that my camera set.
That's a great idea. Yeah, that's a really good idea. I wish that I would. You know what I did? I carried around a light meter when I first shot manual. I was like, let me see what I should be getting here. But the cameras have built-in meters. That's a much better idea, Callum. I like that a lot.
Yeah, go out and shoot. And if you move from a shady room to one with tons of sunlight, just see what's happening in your meter. And if it says it's two stops overexposed, stop down to F8. Hashtag next shot, or bring your ISO down, or, you know, bring your shutter speed up or faster.
Depending on what you want your photo to look like and how you want those attributes to affect your image.
Absolutely. If you screw up, well, no big deal. Just pop it in aperture, see what the camera thinks. You know, it'll give you a rough idea and then flip back. Try it again and you'll keep learning.
Immersion. Just put yourself in that world.
Exactly.
And do your best. I know that you can do it. I know that you want to do it. That's the best way to grow. And that's what we're all here for. If you're listening to this podcast, you want to grow your skills. And we want to help you grow your skills. Oh, hey, Charlie, how are you? On that note, I'm signing off to turn on some bubble guppies for this kid. All right, Callum? Yes. I think we did great today.